which is here within South Africa and west of Mozambique. So that's where I come from. And I am a student at Washington State University. I am studying speech pathology and audiology. And I'm going to sing a Swazi national anthem for you while we're waiting for people. So a Swazi national anthem and another song in my language. I speak Siswati. That's the name of the language. So I'll sing the Swazi national anthem. That's how we open meetings in Swaziland. And this is how it goes. Kulunkulu mnikatiwe tibusiso temaswati siyatibonga tonke tinhlanhla sibonga ingwenyama yetfu livene tinzaba nemifula Busisa tiphathi mandla takangwane Nguwe wetfa somandla wetfu Siminike kuhlakanipha Lokungena bucili Simise usiqinise simakatse. That was the Swazi national anthem. And now I'm going to sing the Lord's Prayer again in Siswati for you.
Baba wetu osezulwini maliphathwe ngobungcweli igama lakho umbuso wakho mawufike emhlabeni njengasezulwini usiphe namhla isinkwa sethu semihla ngemihla usiqolele amacala ethu njengoba nathi sibaqolela usiqolele amacala ethu susisindise ekhohlakaleni Amen. 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 Amen.
So those two songs, one was the Swazi national anthem, the second one was the Lord's Prayer. And for the sake of the people who have just come in, my name is Ivy Dlamini from Swaziland, which is within South Africa on the map, but it's not part of South Africa. I'm a student at Washington State University. I'm studying speech pathology and audiology. And I'm very glad this afternoon to share with you a little bit about Swaziland. I'll begin by giving you a broad picture of Swaziland so that you can have some idea of where it is. But before I go any further, I would like to know if I am loud enough for you people.
Yes.
Am I loud enough. Okay, so I'll proceed. I've already said Swaziland is within South Africa on the map, on the board, west of the Indian Ocean, next to Mozambique, about 50 miles away from Mozambique. And because we are within South Africa, we have a lot of refugees coming in, both from South Africa and Mozambique, into a small country like Swaziland. The country itself is 6,704 square miles. That means it's 120 miles from north to the south, and it's only 90 miles from east to the west. So you can tow it in within one day. And there are 615,000 people, and we have about 80% of those people work in the mines in South Africa, especially men. They work in the mines in South Africa. And the reason for that is that people, not everybody finishes school. It's up to the family to decide whether they want to send their children to school and if they can afford. So the government still doesn't have free education in the lower level, educational level. There's only free education in colleges. People can go to college and university free. So many men work in the mines in South Africa, and we'll see what the women do while the men are in South Africa for a maximum of 2 years without coming home. And the kind of government we have is a monarchy kind of government. We have the youngest king in the world. He is 21 years old, and his name is King Mswati III. Mswati III, Dlamini. He belongs to the Dlamini clan. So there's only one ruling clan in the country, the Dlamini clan, which I happened to be one of them, but it doesn't feel any different to be part of the Dlamini clan or the ruling clan. I don't feel anything. So, the king was nominated by his father, the late King Sobhuza II. Again, the longest ruling monarchy in the world. He died when he was about 85, and that is Sobhuza II had ruled for over 60 years, so that makes him the longest ruling king in the world. So before he died, he nominated this present king, who is now 21 years old. And I understand that one of the criteria for being nominated as the king is you have to be the only child of your mother. And the late king had over 100 wives and 600 children. So out of the 600 children, this one particular young boy was chosen to be the king. So you can imagine how the older brothers felt. And apparently, he was the only one from his mother. And that's to eliminate dangers of jealousy and killing each other. So if all the others are distant from the family, then there are less possibilities of killing the son or poisoning him. So after he was chosen, he had to go to the United Kingdom to hide and to also go to school there. And so when his father died, he had to come back and take the leadership, even though he was very young. In Swaziland, it's predominantly an agricultural country. And some of the crops are corn, which is the staple food in Swaziland. We call it maize, mainly white maize. There's also sugar cane, from which we make sugar to export to other countries in the world. There's also citrus fruits like pineapples, oranges, grapefruit, and many others. Swaziland also has lots and lots of hides or skins from wild animals like kudu, antelope. I'm told that the antelope and the deer are not the same thing, but we have kudu and antelope. Swaziland also grows cotton, mainly for commercial purposes. And the Chinese have just introduced in the last few years they introduced rice, so the country also grows rice and soya beans. And also in addition to the commercial crop, such as cotton, is tobacco. The country also grows tobacco. And then in the area of manufacturing, we manufacture cement and fertilizer and other food products. We also make our own furniture. So that's what we manufacture. And there are two main minerals mined in Swaziland, asbestos and iron ore. And the temperatures in Swaziland are similar to temperatures in northern Florida. Mainly, sometimes it can be from 60 degrees Fahrenheit to 103 degrees Fahrenheit, 100 degrees. So to me, it sounds like the city sauna over there. I understand if I want to feel like I'm in Swaziland, I have to go into that little room. Maybe I'll visit in winter, I'll come back just for that. And the next question I thought you might be interested in is, where did the Swazi people come from? Originally, the Swazi people migrated from Central Africa, being a Bantu clan. They came from Central Africa, lived in Mozambique for a while around Maputo, with a group of other people called Watembe, and then under leadership of a Swazi king, Ngwane II, they came to Swaziland. And living in Swaziland were the Basutu people and the Zulu people and other tribes like the Bushmen. They were there. We still have Bushmen paintings in the country, which shows that the Bushmen were living in present-day Swaziland. But it wasn't until King Mswati the second, because now we have Mswati the third. So King Mswati the second consolidated the Swazi kingdom and established the country. And he did that by conquering the Basutu, driving them to present-day Basutu land, which is south of Swaziland. If you look in the map there, there's Basutu land. And he also drove out the Zulu people who were living mostly in the southern part of Swaziland. And so the Swazi kingdom was established, and that's where the name Swaziland comes from. It's after King Mswati II, the one who established the Swazi kingdom. And his last name is Dlamini. Another question is, how come Swaziland is within South Africa and yet is not part of South Africa? How is that? Well, from 1894 to 1902, Swaziland was ruled by the Afrikaners in South Africa. It was under the Boer government. And after the Anglo-Boer War, that is in 1903, the British took over Swaziland. And there was a debate whether Swaziland should be part of South Africa, and the Swazi kings decided that they preferred to be under the British protectorate. So Swaziland became a British protectorate after the Anglo-Boer War, 1903. And from 1903 to September 6, 1968, Swaziland was a British protectorate, and then it became independent in 1968. So we're only 21 years old. And the kings of Swaziland were called chiefs by the Boers and the British. So after independence, the king, who was then called Chief Sobhuza, became the king or the head of state in Swaziland. And the prime minister, the first prime minister of Swaziland, who happened to be my cousin, was Makosini Dlamini. And he became the head of the government. So the king is the head of the state, and the prime minister is the head of the government. With that broad picture in mind, I would like to sing a traditional Swazi song for you and dance a little bit. And what I'm asking you to do is just to clap like this, everybody. Yeah, just softly enough. Hamba naye soka lami, intombi yangithatheka. Hamba naye soka lami, intombi yangithatheka. Hamba naye soka lami, intombi yangithatheka. Hamba naye soka lami. Intombi yangithathe. 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 Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That was a general picture, and I would like to invite you now to come to the details of the Swazi way of life. I would like to begin by the Swazi homestead. Here in the States, everybody lives in the same house with different rooms. What about the Swazis? How do they live? Swazis live in different huts. There is a cooking hut, H-U-T, and a sleeping hut. And for every wife you have, you build a hut, a cooking hut and a sleeping hut. So if you go to a Swazi homestead, you will find a lot of these beehive huts. And the many huts they are, the larger the family. For example, Ivy comes from a family consisting of 18 children and 9 children from mother or wife number 1, 9 children from wife number 2, and then wife number 3 still doesn't have children. Now, the man can have as many wives as he wants, so long as he pays the bride price. And a bride price for a wife, if she is related to the king, if she's a Dlamini, is 25 cows. One cattle or cow is worth something like $600. Your money is more. So it's 300 emalangen. So you can calculate 300 emalangen or $600 times 25 cows. That's how much a wife is worth. And that's why young men go to South Africa to work in the mines so that they can accumulate a lot of money for buying the cows, then they can pay for a wife. And if you have a wife, you have access to the land. You can choose a piece of land under any chief in the country, and he will allow you to build a home there. Then you come up with these different homesteads. So it's up to you. A second born is 15 cows. But the last born girl is worth 25 cows again. So the first borns and the last borns are called the princesses. We call them kosazanas. So they are more expensive, especially if they are related to the royal family. The other clans who are not related might be 15 cows. And it's very important that a young lady should not have had a child before if she's going to have all these cows. If a person is no longer complete or a virgin, then you lose 5 cows. So when a young man makes a lady pregnant, he is supposed to pay 5 cows for a fine. It's called imvimba. So you pay that fine, and then the next man who marries her will pay less. So that's a typical Swazi homestead. It's made out of many wives and head of the family and children. And the wife is supposed to have as many children as possible. No prevention of children. It's considered murder if you say, oh, okay, only 2 children or one child. The idea is many children in Swaziland die. We have a high infant mortality rate. So the more children you have, the better. If some die,
some will still exist or continue living. So we are supposed to have as many children as possible. If you cannot have a child, if you are a man's wife, two things will happen, because a bright price has been paid for you. If you are a wife, you either go back to your family and ask your sister to join you in the marriage. So both of you become your husband's wives. And she gives birth to children, but they are your children. And she is only your inhlanti, which is literally your fish. So she's like one of your daughters, and her job is to bear children for you. Children are very important in Swaziland, especially the boys, because they are supposed to carry on the family name. So if you start with a boy, you are a good wife. If you start with a girl, good, because the cows will come in, but you have to have a girl. If you don't have a girl again, the husband might go and look for a second wife, so that he can have boys as well. So if you don't want to bring your sister, due to age again, you can just go to one of your high school friends and ask her to come and join you and share your husband with her. And the husband builds huts, a cooking hut and a sleeping hut for each wife. Or it might not be a problem of children. It might be that the wife, or maybe the husband, is tired of the wife, or she is too bossy, something like that. So he might decide to just bring a second wife. And she doesn't ask him why. You are like a property of the husband. You are not supposed to ask him why. So he can do anything with you. He can even beat you to death. In fact, if you don't cook his supper on time, especially the drinking families, the husband and wife will go drinking, then they come back for supper, no supper. Then the clapping starts. The man can clap the wife to death because he paid lobola for her anyway, and nobody will take him to jail. So that's one disadvantage of this bride price or lobola. You are your husband's property. Also, when he dies, because a bride price has been paid for you, you cannot leave and go and get married somewhere else. In a typical Swazi custom, the brothers of the late husband, if he had five brothers, they all come, they are brought before you, and you choose the one you like. So you remain in the home after the death of your husband. You don't go out. And that's the first time women shave their hair. You are not supposed to shave your hair until your husband dies. If you are a man, you shave your hair after the king has died. That's the typical Swazi lifestyle. But in the cities, it's no longer like that. Out in the rural areas, that's how it is. Coming to the roles of the members of the family, we have a picture of the Swazi family. It's made out of many homes, mother, father, up to 20 wives if you can afford. Then you have to make sure you take turns. 1 month you are with wife number one, second month wife number two. By the end of 20 years, you must have gone round at least once. So with that, I would like to go on to the members of the families, children, husband and wife. The roles of the members of the family are divided. There's what is called women's jobs and men's jobs. All the girls almost always follow the mother. When she goes to collect water early in the morning before sunrise, the biggest girls usually follow her. When she goes to collect firewood at noon after cooking the morning food, they can follow. And then in the evening, back to the river again. And we carry water and firewood on the head. So the girls always stay with the mother. And in the evening, when the mother is cooking porridge, which is our staple food made out of corn, the girls learn how to become future wives. They learn how to make handicrafts, which I'll later show you, so that when they get married, they have enough mats. We sleep on mats instead of beds. And if there is a bed, it's only the head of the family's bed. And he alone can sleep on the bed. And he alone can use a spoon for eating. Him alone can sit on a chair, on a table, in a typical Swazi home. Even in meetings, in public meetings, all the women sit on the floor. Only men sit on chairs. So all the girls follow the mother. And all the boys follow the father. They follow him when he goes to herd the cows, the cattle. Many Swazi men have cows for a bride price. When you have paid for your wives, the job is not over. You still have your sons to pay for. You pay for them too. Especially if they stay in the home and help you with agriculture or farming. Then when they take a wife, you are expected to pay for your son, pay a bride price. And it must be a good wife. So she must come here for examination and stay with you for a week to be examined. And the boy cannot bring the wife just to visit a so-called girlfriend. He has to be sure that's the girl he is going to marry. Same thing with a girl. She has to be sure that that's the man she's going to marry. I'm talking about a typical Swazi. You can't just bring boyfriends or girlfriends. You have to be sure, because the parents will scrutinize, and then if they think she's okay, then they will pay if it is the boy's girlfriend. If it is the girl, the other family will pay. So she must go and be scrutinized by another family, her behavior. And one of the things they look for is whether you look adults straight in the eye. So if you look them straight in the eye, if they are talking, you are not a good wife. You are open-minded. So you are supposed to look down and be very respectful and talk softly. The way you sit and dress and the way you eat, there are certain foods that they will give to you, such as meat. If you eat, you are a real gourmandizer. You eat, you don't know what you are supposed to choose. You don't qualify to be a wife. So it's important that the girls learn from the mother how to be a wife. They make handicrafts in preparation for marriage, and they learn how to cook porridge, how much salt to put in. And also the girls learn how to stay healthy, because as you are probably aware, most of the third world countries do not have a lot of things that maybe the ladies have here. For example, when a young lady starts to develop the secondary characteristics, she must learn how to take care of herself. She learns that from the mother. Take the monthly cycle, for example. Women in Swaziland, out in the rural areas, don't have pads and all these tampons, sanitary towels. So what do they do in such a situation? Well, the girls learn that they have to stay inside when the cycle starts. You stay inside. You might be given your own separate beehive hut. So a dry manure is brought in, and you sit on that dry manure for 5 days or 3 days, depending on how long your cycle is. You are not supposed to go out, and they bring you some food. And when you are a married lady, you have just had a baby, before you have a baby, you have to work until maybe the last day you are going to deliver a baby. And when you feel labor, you'll be in the fields working. And when you feel that labor is here, you just go home and you give birth to babies naturally. Many Swazi women, I don't remember my mother's going to hospital, except for me, because my mother was 16, so she was young, so she had to go to the clinic. But many of my brothers and sisters are born at home. We'll be working with my mother in the fields, and all of a sudden she says, "I'm sick," and she goes home. The next thing we hear is that she has a baby all by herself. When mother number two came, then they became each other's midwives. So everything is natural. And if the labor is difficult, grandma usually might prescribe a herb. She can drink that and is supposed to help. But none of my mothers have had that problem. And they are supposed to nurse the babies for 2 years. When you stop nursing the baby, it means that you are ready for another baby and you must have another baby. So if you want to stay longer and not have children, you may as well nurse your baby for 5 years, then you are safe. So that's what the...
What?
They do. They do sometimes. And there are ways of preventing too without taking anything medically. They may use that. And one way of preventing is to send the men to South Africa for 2 years. So when they come back, you know it's time for another child. So that's one way of preventing. So, and also, the girls sit inside in the evening, and when supper is ready, I said the boys will be outside with the father, learning about hunting and how to herd cows and maybe how to take a wife. I don't know exactly what kind of stories they tell out there, but they'll be in a wood structure and will be enjoying open fire and roasting dried corn and nuts. They are not supposed to cook anything. It's humiliating to the wife if a man cooks for himself. It means he no longer likes him, especially if he is visiting just for a month. She wants to do her best to cook for him so he can stay longer. So the men roast and tell stories, and when the supper for everybody is ready, the boys and girls all come in. And now it's the turn for grandpa and grandma to take over when everybody is eating. The boys eat from the same dish, girls from another dish. The mother alone, if there are two mothers, they eat from the same dish. Grandma and grandpa eat in separate dishes made out of clay. Nowadays, you may find metal plates. They eat out of those. And all the children and the women sit down on the floor. Like that. Not like this. So men and women sit down on the floor on the left side of the beehive hut. And the men sit on the right. And then the eating starts. You don't talk when you eat. You eat, and when you have finished, grandma or grandpa tells a story, usually with a moral lesson, once upon a time. And then it's time for everybody to go to sleep. In my family, we all converged in grandma's beehive hut. But after she died, and with schooling, many of us had to study. We started eating in separate huts. We had nobody to tell stories. The only meetings we have now that grandpa and grandma are late are meetings like if one of us girls, for example, was seen not dressed properly, or we came late from collecting firewood or water. We came after sunset. And the mothers, one of the mothers, it doesn't matter which one, suspects that I was doing something bad, or maybe I'm hooked up to somebody, a guy usually. Then there will be a meeting in one of the mother's huts, and they those are the kind of meetings we have. They tell you how to behave and you must be careful and all that. Otherwise, we all eat together like that. Coming to the foods, what do we eat? Mostly corn, and the corn can be eaten fresh, especially in summer. That is between January to May. We eat fresh corn. All we do is cook the corn, the fresh corn, white corn. I was surprised to come to the U.S. and find that corn is raised for cows. I thought those cows are lucky. But we boil the corn in its leaves, and each person might eat up to 5 of those. And that's all for supper. Sometimes supper or lunch, we usually have 2 meals a day. By the time we eat what is called breakfast here, it's already noon. So the next meal is in the evening when everybody's back from their everyday work. So we might eat 5 corns per meal. So we need lots and lots of fields to raise enough maize. Fortunately, the land is free. It's in Swaziland, it's everybody's land. All you have to do is to stay in that particular land, is be loyal to your chief or the community leader by going to his fields whenever he calls men in the community. If you are a man, you take your hoe, put it over your shoulder, go to his field and hoe his field for that day. Next time, the queen, the wife of the community leader, might call all the women. You go to her fields and you cut the grass for repairing her roofs. That's all you have to do to stay in the land. So we need lots and lots of fields for that and for the large family. So we might also have nuts, ground nuts. We boil them in their shells and then each person peels them. But the father of the family has to eat peeled nuts. So the mother peels the nuts for him. And she must not have had a baby recently to prepare food for him. A lady who has, or a wife who has just had a baby is not supposed to cook food for the husband. Only grandma can cook the food for everybody. So you stay away from food for a while. Same thing with a lady who is menstruating. You don't touch food or move around people. And we eat corn fresh. We also dry the corn from June, maybe up to August, the corn is dry. So we remove it from the corn, what do you call it? Cob, yes. And then we crush it, yes. We crush it in a grinder to make not very fine cornmeal, but rough. And we use that for cooking porridge, which is like hard, soft porridge, what you eat for breakfast. And we use that porridge with soup, a soup accompaniment, or wild vegetables such as okra, the stem of the aloe is a different kind of aloe. You can eat it raw, you can cook it, boil it and crush nuts and add the crushed nuts into the aloe, and it makes a nice soup. And in a separate bowl, you put the soup, and then people take porridge and dip it in and eat. And the trouble there, when everybody is eating together, especially the children, the little ones tend to eat only the soup only. So to keep them from eating the soup and not getting enough supper, you put a lot of hot chili. If you don't have hot chili, hunt for it from the Indian shops, you will get it. So also we use the soft porridge for making a drink called mahewu. In this particular case, you crush the maize so that it's very fine, like your cornmeal here or mealie-meal. And you cook that and you cool it. When it is cool, you put like 1 tablespoon full of flour and you mix it. You might add some more water depending on how thick you or thin you want it to be. And then you put it in a clay pot for 2 days and it ferments. And whenever visitors come to visit you, that's what you serve them, something to drink. And between the meals, that's what everybody drinks to keep them going until the next meal, which is usually around 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. So, and also when you serve visitors, when they come, you don't ask them, do you want this or that? You take everything that you have, leftover porridge, it must not have been eaten or touched. So you take the leftover porridge, usually you cook enough so that if a visitor comes, you will have food. And people don't telephone or write to say they are coming. They come anytime. So you want to make sure there's enough food. So, and you want to make sure there's enough of that drink because they will have walked for 20 miles. So they will be hungry. And there is a tradition that you give them something to eat. After all, you don't buy it. So you give them as much as you want. You might even slaughter a chicken. And we children enjoyed having visitors because that's the only time we almost ate meat when there's a visitor. Chickens and cows, goats are special. They are for special occasions. So we depend mostly on wild vegetables and nuts for food. So those are the three ways we eat cornmeal: fresh, porridge, or mahewu as a drink. Also, the women drink that soft drink called mahewu, but for the men, you make a stronger drink to make them happier. What you do is you sprout some of the millet. It's like your sprouts here. You sprout the millet and you add it. Instead of adding flour, you use the crushed sprouts. And that's what they drink. And it's fermented, it's alcoholic. It makes them shake when they move. And also discipline their wives more after taking that stuff. But the ladies like to brew homemade beer for the men. And the women are not supposed to drink usually, because then they can't run the home. But sometimes the men allow their wives to drink. So if your husband allows you, you can go ahead and drink. So for accompanying porridge, beans, nuts, ground nuts, wild pumpkin leaves, aloe, and so on. Without further waste of time, I'm going to go on to the crafts now and show you the crafts, which are part of the Swazi family life, what the men make and what the women make. A little bit away from the food now. The women, from the first grade, we have education, but it's not free. So from the first grade, the girls learn how to make handicrafts. And they focus mainly on grass, anything that cannot be bought with money. So the girls learn how to make that. The reason being that not everybody makes it through high school. And the children have to walk for a long distance. I had to walk for almost 20 miles per day, 10 miles to school and 10 miles back. So by the time you get to school, you are sleepy and sometimes you will not have eaten properly. So not everybody passes. Very few people pass. So in case you don't pass, you want to know how to make handicrafts. So in front of me here, I have some of the handicrafts that the young women learn how to make. And I'm going to pass these around so you can see them. First one is a Swazi traditional liqebesha, that's what it is called. It's a necklace, and it has a design of a flag on it. Here you see black and white, that means black and whites live in harmony in Swaziland. And then you have red for the years of war, bloodshed. And you might have blue for peace. But black and white means we don't have this kind of segregation they have in Swaziland. But if you are a lady and you marry somebody who cannot speak Siswati, then the men are not as happy because they can't tell the son-in-law how many cows the daughter is. So that's the only problem. We also make spoon holders and mats. This particular mat, or these two mats, are for table mats, but this grass mat here is for sleeping on. If you make a bigger mat like this, you can sleep on it. All of these are labeled, and here is the head of the family spoon, or spoon holder. He's the only one who can use a spoon in the family. A net, your husband is your earthly king, so you don't want him to be sick or leave this world too soon. You want to protect him from flies. So after serving his food on the table, you put a fly net over his food. What do Swazis do when they are sick? Usually they don't run to the doctor. Instead, they go to the Swazi traditional medicine man. He is cheaper. One, he can tell you who is making you sick. just for one cow. And after telling you who poisoned you, after playing a lot of drums, using this drumstick, he just says that for treating you for the rest of your life is one cow. So many people go to the traditional medicine men for treatment. And he has lots and lots of calabash or goods like this. And he has different herbs in them for headache, stomach ache, even a love herb that will tune the men so that he loves you more than the other wives. I don't know if it works. I'll find out when I find Mr. Raj. Then I will tune him. Here I have a Swazi morning gown, so I'll pass it around. And also I have a magazine that shows the different Swazi people and different styles of dressing.
When you say morning, do you mean sadness or do you mean AM?
Morning. Not crying. But early in the morning when you wake up,
okay.
You can put this on. So pass it around. Yeah. I think at this point I'll be happy to ask some questions. I don't have very many handicrafts for men, but that stick there is what the men make. They make the sticks, long sticks, which we'll see in the booklet for beating women and fighting. If somebody makes you angry, you don't call the police, you just use your stick. So most of the men walk around with sticks in Swaziland. And when somebody makes you angry, you just hit them on the head with that stick. If he has a stick, he might hit you back and you fight. So the one who surrenders is the weak one. So next time he knows, he shouldn't tease you. He respects you. But men make wood bowls, those sticks and wood spoons and wood containers for milk. We milk our cows with hands, so we need wood bowls for that. Otherwise, I'm going to ask for some questions.
Netting there, did you make the netting also?
Did the ladies make the net?
Yes, before it's embroidered.
No. The net is bought. All the ladies do is put the decoration on the net.
This is a homemade musical instrument and a pot holder. I don't really know.
Yeah, the second one.
Right picture on. There's a picture of a musical instrument.
Oh, yes, it's a musical instrument. Okay. Yes.
You said that men have multiple wives. Does that mean there are a lot of bachelor men around?
No. I am told that there are more women than men in Swaziland. So to give everybody a chance, the few men should marry as many wives as possible. So there are more women than men in Swaziland. Good question. Any other questions? Yes.
Let's hear about your education then, when you started school and you obviously went to high school. And have you gone to university?
Yes. I think I'm one of the few lucky Swazi women to make it through high school. There are very few women who make it through school. What happened in my case is that my mother went to school just enough to learn how to read and write. And she worked in a mission station and she wished she could speak English, but she didn't have that chance. And I understand the reason why she didn't have a chance is because after school my father would be hiding under the pipe, and when my mother was crossing the pipe, the bridge, my father will come and report himself, we call it, tell her that his mother was too old to cook for herself, so my mother decided to love my father. So anyway, so my mother wanted all her children to be educated. Otherwise, a place of a woman in Swaziland, a typical Swazi home, is in the home. So it doesn't matter whether you're educated or not. The family will still get their cows anyway. So there's no need to educate women. So what happened is my parents educated me up to secondary school. And because of my hearing problem, and I lost my hearing through mumps when I was 5. And in Swaziland, if you have mumps, you go to a termite hall, and you kneel there in the termite hall, and you shout, "I have mumps," you tell the termites. And they are supposed to come out of the hall at night while you are asleep and take away the swelling. I tried that prescription. It did not help. I had mumps, and somehow that affected my eardrums, so I lost my hearing. So when I got to high school where the teachers write notes on the blackboard, I was ready to stay home. But a Peace Corps volunteer who now lives in Wyoming realized that I was all by myself during break, and that at some days I would pass everything in the test. Maybe the following day I'll get zero. So she wanted to find out why this up and downs, and I told her I had a hearing problem. She was the first teacher to ask me that question, and so she took me to South Africa and bought a hearing aid for me. And then with that, I was able to go through high school, 2 years of high school, and then university for 4 years, and I majored in history and English and theology as a minor, Bible, and taught for 5 years. And then I wanted to do something for the hearing impaired. So I resigned from teaching, and I'm now doing speech pathology so I can help the hearing impaired also. But that's how I made it through high school. With the help of a hearing aid, I was able to get the second position in the whole nation in what we call United Nations exams. And if you do that, you get a scholarship. You get to go to university free. So I went to university free, passed well, and now I got a scholarship to come here through the same process of passing well. So without a hearing aid, I wouldn't be here. I really have respect for Peace Corps. So if you ever think about it, I think it's a good thing. Especially taking the time to find out why the child is behaving the way it is or is behaving. I think that teacher made an impression to me. And the next thing I was going to ask her was, what is it that makes her different from the other teachers? I never asked that question, but I ended up staying with her on weekends so I could help her, because in Swaziland there are no washing machines out in the rural areas, running water. So I washed her clothes and everything. It's not slavery or, what do you call it, servanthood. But in Swaziland it's better. You are doing a good service if you hire somebody to wash your clothes, especially if they are ladies, because they need the cash to send the children to school. So this lady allowed me to wash her dishes and clothes on weekends to help me with, teach me how to manage money and buy pens for myself. So through that, I got to learn more English, and also I learned while visiting with her on weekends that she was a believer, a Christian, because we read the Bible before we went to bed. So she didn't have to preach, but her life was different from the teacher's. So I think Christians have a role to play in the world. You don't have to be a preacher, but in small ways, you can change a life. Like myself, I'm here because of the Peace Corps. Good question. I don't know if I've answered all of...
Thank you very much.
You are welcome. Yes, Elizabeth.
How many Christians do you have in Swaziland? Do you believe like some Africans in the fathers of your ancestors?
Good question. We have two religions in Swaziland. We have Christianity, different denominations, and then we have traditional ancestral worship. We believe, those people who are not Christians, believe that when your grandpa or grandma die, they come back to life in the form of a green snake. So if you see a green snake in Swaziland, you report, you don't kill it. You report to the parents, and the head of the family goes to one of the traditional medicine men with red hair, and mud on their head, and you find out whether that was grandma or grandpa and what that person wanted. And usually they go for one thing, which is very rare in Swaziland, meat. So they ask you to slaughter the biggest bull in the family. So in most homes, there is a bull that doesn't do any farm work and is usually fed. And that's the bull that's for grandma or grandpa when they come back to visit. And when that bull is slaughtered, it's kept overnight and it's eaten by everybody in the community the next day and for the next 5 days. So that's how you please the ancestors. And they are supposed to be the mediator between you and the creator. You don't approach God in person. You go through the ancestors. I don't know if they didn't like God. I don't know what happens. So that's what we believe. And then there's Christianity. And there are two marriages, not divorce. The traditional marriage, oak is smeared on your forehead early in the morning at 4 a.m. if you are a newlywed. Once that is done, it means that they took soil from one of the ancestors' graves and smeared it on you. So you are not only united to your husband, you are united to the ancestors. So when your husband dies, nobody else can take you as a wife. So you cry when that happens. It means you are a wife. Whether you've worn the veil or not, you are now a wife. If you are a girlfriend and you are visiting a guy's home and he does that to you, it's a pity you are married. Whether you decide to change your your mind afterwards, it's too late. Everybody knows. So that's why you cry, because it means he has spoiled you for everybody. You can't go anywhere. So that's how you are married and not divorced. If your husband gets tired, he just takes more wives. But you can't go away. You become his wife. If you want to, you may marry the Western way, Christian way, wear a veil. If you are a virgin, you cover your face. If you have had a child before, play it a little bit, so you are no longer complete, then you open your face. Everybody knows then if you have had a child or not. If you don't report, somehow the man will find out, because he is fighting for those cows he worked for in the mines, or his father might have worked for. So they want to make sure that when we are married, we are his only wife and worthy of those 25 cows. So you report by opening your face or closing your face. Have I answered your question?
Yeah.
Good. Any other questions before we close? Yes.
Does a woman choose to marry, and what happens to the women who don't ever marry?
Oh, a good question. You are a lesser human being if you don't marry. You are not a complete human being, whether you are a man or not. And I understand, I'll find out when I die. Even the way you are buried is different from the way they bury those who have been married. You almost have no place. After you are married, you are guaranteed a graveyard in your husband's home. If you are not, then you are just floating. You'll have to go to your father's place, but that's not where you should be buried. So as everybody is expected to be married. If you don't marry, like in my case, I've been running away from home and going to school. Your father might choose a husband for you. And especially if you belong to the royal family, you are supposed to respect your parents and you don't ask them why you go. He might choose to marry you when you are 5 months old, very young. He takes somebody else's cows and use those cows for farming. And he might kill some of them and eat them, or please grandpa, grandma who has died. So when you grow up, you start looking around for that handsome guy. It's too late. You are already somebody's wife. They just tell you, why don't you go to this man's home? So sometimes the parents choose the wife, the husband for you. Sometimes you decide. In my case, either way, my father and I are in good terms. So if I don't find anybody, he can choose a husband for me. And I hope he will choose the right one. Any other questions?
How old are you?
I'm going to be 32 this year, October.
Now when you go back with your speech, what do you plan to do with it?
I'll be working in a government hospital. I'm sponsored by the Swaziland government, and I'm expected to go home, work at least for 2 years, up to 5 years, before I can go anywhere else in the world. So I've been a teacher. I resigned from teaching because the government encourages people to stay in the same profession. I can almost not go back. I'm not sure if I can, but I doubt if I can go back to teaching. So I'll be working in hospital. Once you are trained by the government to be in a particular profession, you have to stay there because the country is still developing. They can't afford people moving back and forth.
But would a husband permit you to continue working or what?
It will depend. If it is the kind that my father will choose for me, I doubt if he will let me work. I'll have to go home, and he can tell you, if you are a wife, not to work, and you just have to follow, especially if he has paid a bright price for you. So there are very few men who are brave enough to let their wives go out. Many men are afraid they will lose their wives to the teachers, especially if he is not a teacher or he doesn't work outside, so they would rather keep their wives at home. Yes.
How do you feel about the possibility of getting married and having to be a midwife and look down and speak quietly and stuff?
I'm not against marriage. I think it's a good thing for Swazi women who almost don't know of any other way. It's a way of being secure. You can't have a house by yourself. The government just won't give you land. They are very hesitant. They say that if you have a house by yourself, that will be a den for prostitutes. So they want everybody to get married, men and women. So I think it's a good thing. But then I'll have to decide whether I want to just serve my family or use the knowledge I've acquired to serve everybody in the country. I think this, if I'm single, I can reach more people. If I'm married, then I will be very limited to the kind of work. The husband can say, okay, no more speech pathology, so you stay home. Many people will lose that way. So I'll have to consider working for a while. Unfortunately, in Swaziland, the older you are, the less chances of finding a man, because the purpose of getting married, the sole purpose is to have children, to inherit the cows. Swazi homes they are not nomadic. So there are all these fields, and so generations after generations have been living in the same spot. Last question, I think, according to my watch, is time up. Yes.
Is there an AIDS epidemic in your country too? AIDS?
Yes. The last paper I read that there were about 11 deaths. So it's there, but maybe the way of testing or finding...